I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come aboard.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Tuesday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Feeling good. Doing well.
That's all that really matters. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Good morning. We're happy to be here. And we thank you for joining us every single morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific, right here in the ever-expanding CBS Sports Radio Network. And SiriusXM Channel 206. Gary Parrish is going to join us coming up in 20 minutes to do a little bracketology, college basketball action on this March the 2nd. Over the weekend, another fun finish in NASCAR as coming from behind late in the race for a victory is young William Byron in the number 24 car, just 23 years old. Here's how it sounded.
23-year-old William Byron from Charlotte, North Carolina, came up through Legends Cars. The East Series, the Truck Series, Xfinity, checkered flag. William Byron wins in Homestead, gets his second career win in his 111th start, and his team owner, Rick Hendrick, gets his 264th career win, four wins away from tying Petty Enterprises for the most ever.
Fox Sports, on your call, joining us this morning on the show after his victory is William Byron. William, good morning. Congratulations. How you doing?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. We appreciate you finding time for us. How's it been the last couple of days basking in the glory of the victory?
Yeah, it's been fun. Honestly, we got back from Homestead Sunday night, about 11 o'clock, and just was able to see some friends and just excited. You never know when wins are going to come around, but this one was definitely really rewarding, and had a great car, obviously, and our first win together, Rudy and I, my crew chief. So it's going to be a fun year, I think, and just gotta keep it going, hopefully. But yeah, it's a really good start to the season, so pretty pumped about it.
Been a fun start to the season, I think, for fans because they've had some unlikely winners. You guys finished number 26th and 33rd in Daytona in the first 2 weeks. And for NASCAR fans, they're watching some long shots. Michael McDowell wins Daytona. Christopher Bell won in week number 2. You came in week number 3. Do you feel like there's a little bit of a group going on right now? Hey, some of the outsiders cracking in here, elbowing our way in for the checkered flags.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the season's definitely, the unpredictability of Daytona was really, I think, threw everyone for a loop. Even the road course there is a track that we haven't been to in a long time. So when we got to Homestead, it was a little bit more familiar, kind of a little bit more usual players, but still some of those guys that, have been running well, stayed running well. So it's a unique season. I mean, they threw 7 road course races at us, which is, we usually only have 2, so that's a huge change and adds a lot of parity. And, I think, honestly, going to Vegas this weekend, I think it's going to be more normalcy. But, it's been a crazy start to the year and just glad to be on the right side of it this weekend. We had to start close to the back because of our finish at Daytona, so it was nice to kind of be able to get up through the field.
William Byron takes home the win. Last weekend at Homestead, he joins us this morning here on the show. you benefited from an interesting incident in front of you, as you had a couple of teammates, Martin Truex Jr. and Denny Hamlin, got into it. They're teammates, and they were in front of you, and yet because of a blocking situation, they slowed down, you buzzed by. You had those two guys having some harsh words with one another. Truex was not happy with his teammate Hamlin for blocking him. We heard that on the radio. So tell me about what you saw in front of you and how you took advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, coming to the end of the stage ends for us is huge. It's kind of like our, you know, end of the quarter, per se. So for us, I mean, it's really big to kind of get those points that are up for grabs at the end of a stage. So for us, yeah, you try to go as hard as you can on those restarts and try to have a good restart, because you never know how it's gonna work out. But you know, we had a one lap dash basically to the stage end, and those guys went into turn three and kind of took each other up the track, and the 11 I think just kind of got tight and went up the track and just opened the door for us. And I think really little moments like that kind of open up the avenue for us to win, because you get the track position and you control the race up front, and you know, you learn a lot about your car and stuff when you're leading the race. So it, all that stuff's really important, you know, at different times of the race, kind of getting control of the race and kind of taking the lead.
Did you hear the radio call between Truex and Hamlin and how that sounded?
I did not, but I'm looking forward to, once the race comes out on YouTube, I'll definitely listen to it.
So you have a long career in front of you, but getting that victory over the weekend must have been fun. What were the emotions like when you crossed the finish line?
It was just super rewarding for us. I mean, we put a lot of effort in the off season, you know, training, you know, mental, physical stuff, working on the car just to make sure we had the right setup in it. So we put a lot of effort into this race especially, and it's good to see it pay off. You know, we kind of know the blueprint now for what we got to do to be competitive. So it's really cool to see it, you know, this early in the season, see it pay off like that, and be able to, you know, honestly go to these other races and be aggressive. You know, we can be aggressive on pit road and we can be aggressive on the track because we don't have to worry about making the playoffs. So it's pretty cool in that aspect, and we're definitely going to go for more wins.
Your car, your number carries such significance. Number 24, obviously Jeff Gordon's number for so many years. What does it mean to be driving a number 24 on the side of your vehicle?
Yeah, it's meant a lot to me. I mean, it's, you know, I think the biggest thing, a lot of fan base, you know, a lot of supporters from Jeff have kind of come over to the 24, and that's been really fun. But it's a lot of pressure too, and I think that, you know, it's finally starting to feel normal and natural to have that number. And you know how much pride people take in that number winning. So you want to do a good job for it. So it's, you know, hopefully we can kind of add to the legacy and you know, get past that kind of 100 win mark. I think Jeff had like 93 wins. So it's definitely a cool number, and you know, something like, you know, one of those legacy things like the Yankees or you know, something like that. So it's pretty cool.
For sure. One story that pops up every so often around the NASCAR circuit is the fact that you are dating the sister of Ryan Blaney, one of your competitors, obviously, on the circuit. And he actually found out before you had told him. And so, as the story goes, he had brought it up to you. Was it an awkward moment? And how have you guys handled that since this? I think it was about a year ago or so now.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago now. But, yeah, No, it was good. I mean, we, you know, honestly, the two of us, we get along super well. So at the time, I didn't know him as well, I guess, and I was kind of nervous. I didn't know how to tell him, and so I didn't quick enough, and obviously he found out, so that was a bummer. But he was, you know, cool about it, and I mean, definitely we're really good buddies now. Yeah, we were then too, so it's cool, and yeah, so it all worked out.
I read that you are an Eagle Scout, and I did Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, but then I had to end up bailing at Weeblos. So I never was as disciplined or as smart as you were. I want to know, what is the coolest thing you learned by becoming an Eagle Scout?
Yeah, so I was actually telling my girlfriend this the other day about kind of the last camping experience I had was definitely the most exciting. I don't know. It's probably the most learning too, but it was just super cold. In Boy Scouts, you have to have a certain amount of camping nights to kind of get your Eagle Scout. So I wasn't a huge fan of camping, but anyways, I went to the last camping trip and it was super cold, and I was sitting by the fire with two other guys, and the rest of the troop had kind of gone out and was searching for something, I guess. And we were just sitting there, and this big bear about the size, you know, the height of a table, kitchen table, comes walking by. Oh, and God. I didn't know what to do. We just stood still, and it was just a surreal experience kind of to see that. I still tell people about it.
But the bear just let you guys hang out and just kept walking by, no trouble, didn't even stop?
Yeah, it didn't even stop. I mean, literally just walked by, like, just normal pace. And we just kind of stood still. I mean, you know, we kept talking, I guess, or we didn't really know what to do, but it happened so quickly, and you kind of just freeze. So it was crazy. I can't imagine if he, like, turned our direction, and, I mean, I don't even know what would happen. So it was definitely a blessing that nothing happened.
That bear was a Jeff Gordon fan, so he was okay with you. He sniffed out the number 24. He said, hey, you know what? This guy's okay.
Yeah, I guess.
William Byron winning over the weekend in Homestead, the number 24 Chevy car for Hendrick Motorsports, getting that victory, and now the rest of the season can unfold, and as he said, not pressured to make that playoff, and so now you guys can race aggressively, which is very cool. William, congratulations on the victory, man, and thanks so much for the time this morning. I appreciate it. Hopefully we can talk again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
My pleasure. William Byron joining us this morning on the show. It's been a great early season for us with NASCAR drivers. They've been so good to us. The sport's always been so good to us as well. So hopefully you're enjoying our conversations with many of the drivers. We had Michael McDowell after he took home the checkered flag at Daytona. And we had Denny Hamlin before Daytona. And now we just had the winner at Homestead, William Byron. So it's been very cool the last couple of weeks here from a NASCAR standpoint for us. You can always hit us up on the Twitter with your trashes, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. John tweets, wow, you guys didn't even catch Mraz saying it was a HIPPO violation rather than a HIPAA. Nah, John, just so you know, it's a common mistake made by our listeners. We catch it. We can't correct it all of the time, or all of the things Mraz says all of the time, or else we would never get through segments. So you just have to kind of chalk it up every so often. You know, it's like a missed shot in basketball. You don't stop, take a timeout, huddle, oh, what happened with that shot? Sometimes you just got to keep the offense rolling, and that's what we did there.
You know, I know it's a HIPAA violation. It's such an ongoing wink-wink joke that I made the mistake once about 40 years ago now on the show, it seems like, that's just what we're going to call it now, a HIPAA violation.
Oh, okay, so you know it's not a HIPAA violation.
Yeah, now I just refer to it as a HIPAA because at one point I made the mistake and called it a HIPAA violation. We trashed me so bad for it. That now anytime, you know, it comes up, I'm just going to call it a HIPAA violation.
Okay. All right.
8:43 a.m. Eastern.
Hermosa Beach Brent tweets, there is zero wrong with the speed of eating. Eating fast is a sign of respect to your colleagues and listeners/viewers. A Pinto is faster than a Ferrari if a Ferrari is out of gas. I have Mraz's side on this. That's an interesting way to take this. Billy tweets, dude ordered, ate, and paid for waffles in less time than it takes me to microwave a bag of popcorn. Hashtag trash Mraz.
Oh, break out the hazmat suit.
Mike tweets, wait, hold up. If Florida fast food service is slow, says Mraz, but he was in and out of a Waffle House in 12 minutes, what's really going on, Mraz? Please explain.
Waffle House is cut from a different cloth than everybody else. Waffle House, you could be in the southern tip of Florida or the northern part of Georgia, wherever you are in the south, Waffle House is a machine. They would put out food. They are the outlier in Florida food putting out in time.
Crunching and munching.
Lonnie tweets, happy Trash Tuesday, eh? I'm Trashy Mraz, who goes through Waffle House in 12 minutes. His fascination with throwing things down his throat. You're telling me Mraz didn't get his bacon and yet he paid for it? Hashtag trash him.
Ew, that garbage bag is leaking.
Did you pay for the bacon you never got?
I think I did, but guys, look, this is really not meant to be a knock on Waffle House. Isn't Waffle House just kind of a gamble, like you order and you hope you get everything? That's kind of what I've been taught through the years at Waffle House, so I just assumed I cut my losses.
Bacon.
Mark tweets, I'm trashing, making fun of Mraz. I was eating chicken wings alone yesterday. I destroyed them. It was barbaric and not pretty. A little wet and a little drippy. Hashtag trash, you guys.
Are those maggots?
Adriana tweets, I'm trashing all of this Russell Wilson trade drama. I can't take it. I survived the Legion of Boom breaking up. I survived 20 years of Tom Brady winning everything. But this I cannot stomach. Leave Wilson alone. That goes for you too, Mayor Cantrell. Hashtag trash him.
Total wasteoid.
Leave Brittany alone. I'm with you, Adriana. Russell Wilson, he's not getting traded. He's going to have to stay put. Going to have to play nice. Him and Pete Carroll, kiss and make up. Time to go back to work in September. When we come back on the show, Bracketology, College Hoops with Gary Parrish, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
You're so funny.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
That music can only mean one thing. College basketball is here. It is March, and we are ready. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Listen to us across the great CBS Sports Radio network, hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border, on Sirius XM, channel 206, and stream us on the radio.com app. You can also watch our simulcast at watchda.com and on Twitch. Joining us, CBS Sports college basketball insider, writer, and personality, Gary Parrish. Gary, good morning. How we doing?
I'm hanging in there, brother. How you been?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Always good to hear your voice and have you here on the show. Gonzaga is the number one team of the country. Is it them with a bullet, or is it pretty close at the top?
Well, I think they're clearly number one, and anybody voting, say, in the AP poll otherwise is making this harder than it needs to be. You know, they're undefeated. All of the computers rank them number one. They've got double-digit wins over Iowa and Virginia and Kansas. You know, they've done everything they could possibly do to deserve the number one ranking. But if you want to start a conversation about whether they can be challenged, I think it's clear they can be challenged. And the biggest challenger right now is the Michigan team that is not unbeatable. It's been beaten by Minnesota. But, man, when you watch them recently, there are times where they look like a really tough out. At this point, whether you're basing it on what you're watching or the resumes or the computers, it does seem like Gonzaga, Michigan is at the top, and Michigan appears to be a legitimate challenger.
Gonzaga is not from a high major conference, but they are not a mid-major. They're no longer a Cinderella. They went to the Final Four a couple of years ago. When did they officially make that turn from cute Cinderella mid-major story to they are a college basketball powerhouse year in, year out?
For me, it was years ago. For most, it was probably when they made the national championship game. For some, they're still, you know, a West Coast Conference team. I promise you, DA, I get tweets every day from people who say that Gonzaga couldn't do this if they played in the Big Ten, and Gonzaga couldn't do this if they played in the Big 12. Again, these people refuse to acknowledge that, you know, Gonzaga has been in the second week of the NCAA tournament a bazillion times at this point. Gonzaga has been ranked number one in multiple years. Gonzaga has played for a national championship. Gonzaga's got a future Hall of Fame coach, two, you know, future lottery picks on the roster right now. They just assume that this couldn't happen, you know, if Gonzaga, for whatever reason, was affiliated with the SEC or the Pac-12. The truth is Gonzaga would be awesome in any league, and that has been obvious for a while now. But selfishly, I hope that the Zags could win this national title, if only because it'll clean my mentions up a little bit on Twitter. People will continue to dismiss them if they want to until they've actually cut the nets on that first Monday night in April. At this moment, they are the favorite to do that. And if they do it, I'm sure somebody out there will yell once again, but they'll be yelling to mostly nobody at that point.
Gary Parrish joins us talking college basketball with him. What did Juwan Howard do to bring this type of dominance to Michigan?
Well, the first thing I think when you start comparing his background to other quote-unquote former NBA players who return to their alma maters. His background is vastly different. You know, Juwan Howard spent years working beside and learning from Eric Spoelstra in Miami, on an NBA bench. I mean, Eric Spoelstra is a future Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame coach. So Juwan had that under his belt before he ever stepped foot back in Ann Arbor. And then I think you can't overstate the staff that he put together. You know, he kept one of John Beilein's assistants to make sure he had somebody who had a great relationship with the current players and the prospects he was going to try to recruit. He brought somebody from the NBA because basically every staff in college now wants somebody that has, some NBA experience on it. And then he hired Phil Martelli, who, as you know, is a longtime successful head coach at St. Joe's, somebody who has basically seen it all, had a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, had a team that went undefeated deep into the season. And so Juwan surrounded himself with perfect people to supplement what he could bring. And the results have been unbelievable. Like, I'm somebody who actually said when it was first brought up about Juwan Howard maybe coaching Michigan, I'm somebody who said this is what they should do. And I know everybody will say it's a good decision now, but not everybody was saying it back then. Yep. I thought it was the smart thing to do. I say that not to pat myself on the back, but only to say this. I didn't anticipate it going this well. I didn't think that it would be an upgrade over John Beilein. And let me be clear, I'm not saying Juwan Howard is a better basketball coach or even college basketball coach than John Beilein. I'm just saying that Michigan's program is operating at an extremely high level. Again, ranked second in the AP poll right now, projected number one seed. And I wonder if casual basketball fans understand this. They've also got the number one recruiting class in America committed right now, set to enroll in advance of next season. So Michigan is a major national factor right now, and it appears it's going to stay that way for a pretty good time.
No, absolutely. And you deserve to take some bows because there was a lot of people that thought that hire was silly, that they were going after a big name but not a great coach. And Howard has proven to be both of those things. Gary Parrish joins us this morning on the show. A couple of years ago, Loyola Chicago was everybody's Cinderella, Sister Jean, Final Four. That was fun. They're no longer just a out-of-nowhere program, and they're ranked to the top 25. How good is Loyola Chicago this year? Could we see them dance again?
You can see them in the Final Four again. I mean, I'm not predicting that this team will go as far as that team, but I can tell you this team is better than that team. Given the nature of a single elimination tournament, who knows? I mean, they could lose in the first round. Virginia has done it as a one seed. But this team is better than the Final Four team. They're terrific. 21-4 overall, 16-2 in the Missouri Valley. They've just won the league title for the third time in a four-year span. They are ranked 12th at KenPom. Now, that might not mean anything to people without context, but understand when they went to the Final Four, they finished 31st at KenPom. Again, this team is ranked 12th right now. So they don't have these big signature wins, that a Michigan or a Gonzaga might have, simply because they were unable to schedule, too many awesome opportunities given the nature of the pandemic. But they have been rolling for a while now. The lone loss in a couple of months is a 1-point overtime loss at Drake. And so, without that, they would have probably been into the top 10 at this point. This is a serious college basketball team. You're not going to watch them and see future lottery picks or even any future NBA players. But Porter Moser, for the second time in a four-year span, has put together a team that can absolutely compete for a Final Four. And the idea that we're even talking about Loyola Chicago going to the Final Four again so quickly is a testament to the culture that he's established in Chicago.
It's remarkable. You're absolutely right. Gary Parrish joining us this morning on the show. I want to end with a football question here, because when we had the Alliance Cookout a couple of years ago, I listened to your show off at a 92.9 and heard you guys break down the Express and the future of that organization, et cetera. And now we are left with, the first time in a couple of years, no spring football. And I wonder if spring football could have worked under the Alliance and what will happen with the XFL. Memphis is a good example of that as a city. What do you think about the prospects of spring football in a town, in a city like Memphis? And had the structure financially been better, could the Express have been kicking this year, would have been year three?
I actually think that something like that could work, but I think the the previous leagues have missed a little bit. What you need to do is target places like Memphis and below. In other words, I don't know how you gain anything by putting a team in Atlanta or in New York or in L.A. where they already have like NFL franchises. Like, you're never going to be able to make people go, this is our football team, when you're in the same city with an NFL team. What I thought for a while is find the biggest markets in the country that don't have NFL teams and place football teams there and say, this is your football team, embrace it and enjoy it. I want to be clear, I'm not insisting that would make it work. But, you know better than I, this is a country that loves football. I mean, you and I could talk about college basketball for 20 minutes and it won't resonate as much as any top 10 NFL story on any day of the year. Football is king in this country. There's no reason that there's not a market for it basically 12 months a year, but you've got to be strategically smart about it. Don't try to go to Atlanta and make people care about something other than the NFL. Don't try to go to Kansas City and try to make people care about something other than the NFL. Go to places where the NFL isn't in that market and try to give those places a, quote, professional football team to embrace. I think then maybe, just maybe, it could work.
Gary Parrish joining us this morning on the show. Watch him on CBS Sports, CBS Sports Network. Follow him on Twitter, at Gary Parrish CBS, because right now, bracketology, you need to know everything before you fill out your brackets, getting ready for the conference tournaments, etc. Gary's all over it. Before I let you go, our friend Andrew Bogish, Fordham grad, he's dying to know, who's Fordham going to hire? Do you have a name to throw out there for him?
I don't have a specific name to throw out there, but, the coaching change was a long time coming. Jeff Neubauer, who is somebody I like and have known for a long time, the numbers are the numbers, and they were running counter to what you need to do to keep your job. So it's not a surprise that he's no longer the coach, a bit of a surprise that it happened midseason. But Fordham will probably do, what schools at that level do, which is look for an up-and-coming assistant on a successful staff and try to hope that is the person that can get this thing turned around. But I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. In the A-10, that is such a tough job. It's not impossible, but it's clearly difficult.
Mm-hmm. Gary Parrish joining us this morning on the show. Keep locked into Gary's work as we get closer to the brackets. Man, it's always good to hear you, buddy. Thanks so much. I'm sure we'll do it again when the tournament rolls around.
I can't wait. Appreciate you having me.
Okay, my pleasure. Gary Parrish joining us. Excellent work here on the DA Show. Phenomenal. Standing by with our headline this morning is Andrew Bogish, who is waiting patiently for Fordham to make that hire. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
Yeah, I wanted Gary to give me a good name so I could suggest it to those making the decision to seem important, like I knew what I was talking about, but I didn't get a specific name.
How about Winthrop's head coach, who we're going to have tomorrow morning on the show? I mean, he's bringing them to the tournament every single year, although I don't think that Fordham's necessarily a much better job than that.
Well, I think the problem would be that if Pat Kelsey keeps winning at Winthrop and they make the tournament, he might be able to jump my beloved Rams and get a different, maybe a slightly higher level job. So that'd be nice, but he might be waiting for something a little bit bigger than Fordham right now.
How about Dave Freeman?
Right. How about Super Dave?
A package deal. Let's take them both.
Mike Pacheco as his assistant coach, and away you guys go.
Yeah.
Midnight madness at Fordham.
Gary was very nice to Jeff Neubauer. I'm not sure that Dave and Mike Pacheco and me couldn't do at least the same job that Mr. Neubauer did over the last couple of years. So in the end, it wasn't a Peloton profile update. It wasn't the Packers, the Colts, or the Bills. It was J.J. Watt himself announcing yesterday he was signing with the Cardinals, a two-year deal reportedly said to be worth $23 million guaranteed dollars. Watt may have had richer offers from the Colts and Browns, with the Titans offering something similar to Arizona. Zion with 26 points and 10 boards. The Pelicans outscored the Jazz last night, 129-124. Nikola Jokic with 39 in the Nuggets 118-112 victory in Chicago. 30 points, 14 boards, 15 assists from James Harden in the Nets 124-113 OT win in San Antonio. And Luka Doncic posted 33-10-9 in the Mavs 131-124 W in Orlando. But the basketball performance of the night came from the Big South quarters.
Mm-hmm. Vaudrin dribbling up top. Vaudrin, high post, using a Telford screen. Backdoor arm, slam dunk! A triple-double for Chandler Vaudrin. And Coach Kelsey calls timeout. The second ever triple-double in the Big South Conference Tournament.
Wow.
The fourth triple-double for Vaudrin in a Winthrop uniform. And the eighth in the career of the Big South Conference Player of the
Take
Year.
Take a breath. Super Dave Friedman, wow. Winthrop Radio. Chandler Vaudrin, 10 points, 12 boards, 10 assists, and an 83-54 rout of High Point. Nobody beats High Point by 30 in the Big South quarters, but Winthrop did it last night. Our Eagles now deal with Longwood. Good luck to them in the semis on
Number
Thursday.
One. I'm pretty sure John Rothstein, the other day when I asked him about the Winthrop Eagles, I mean, by the way, is this show now becoming even more rabbit holy and niche by the minute? We're talking about Winthrop Eagles and Fordham basketball hires here on the DA Show and Alliance of American Football 2 years after its dissolution, just to fill time here. But I think he brought up, was it, what was the name of this guy that had the triple-double?
It's Chandler Vaudrin. He did. You could hear John like scrolling through whatever database he has in front of him to find Chandler's name and his height and weight, but he did find it the other day.
He did, and he said, watch that guy. So then a couple days later, this dude drops only the second triple-double in Big South Conference Tournament history. Number two, what is amazing is that you have this Winthrop team, and they are legitimately good, and they have legitimate players, and we may end up with Winthrop making a run of the tournament and legitimately Super Dave making crazy taco references in the NCAA tournament. Bogues, this is not that far off from our dream coming to reality.
No, I mean, they're two wins away from being in, no doubt about it. And then we wait and see where they go on Selection Sunday. And, I mean, they only have one loss still, right? So, I mean, they're going to probably avoid that first four, too. I mean, they're going to be firmly in the bracket. So we're going to get a Super Dave either Friday or Saturday afternoon early on, hopefully yelling about tacos in an NCAA tournament upset.
And there's two important things here. Number one, I do have to say, it sounds like Super Dave is just making the Big South media guide as well. I don't know what the budget is down there that he was able to spit out all those stats. But
it's on the table.
I am sitting back because we are probably a week or two away from DA fighting with management when they send out that email about how we're only allowed to play Westwood One calls and we're not allowed to play the local broadcast calls. And DA fighting to play Friedman calls is something I am here for and something to keep an eye on behind the scenes here on the DA Show.
It's 2021. They're not listening anymore. Don't worry. We can play whatever we want.
You are allowed to, in that email, you are allowed to request permission to play a local broadcast. So that's going to be a heck of an email, too, when you're explaining to the powers that be at Westwood One why Super Dave highlights need to be on our air.
The mothership disconnect.
You hear this taco reference? That's about our show.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. We're puffy with sodium.
You better bring your raincoat.
We like stuffing.
No, we're the stuffing
guys.
Wait
a minute.
We're the reason he says they like stuffing.
He has a weird waist.
We got weird waists.
How about with bacon?
Yeah, that started here.
No, no, we say with bacon. We say with bacon.
If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more.
No, you know the have fun with your marriage guy? That's us. We do that.
Have fun with your marriage.
He's great.
No, it all happened because Mraz had to take the SAT. You know, because he never took the SAT and he applied to Duke and he thought he was going to get into Duke. You know, you listen to the show all the time, right?
I like stuffing.
But they had communal showers, so he wouldn't go. You know the story, don't you? Mr. Dederoff?
He's
the third
the joke,
most powerful guy in radio.
You listen to the show for a while. You remember Painkiller Pat? Well, he does all these cool drops, just like Super Dave does them now, too. And he does them in the middle of basketball games. We really want to play him with the show.
Brandon Whedon's a bum.
There's no denying that.
Well,
one.
That's the clincher.
Oh.
That's so ridiculous.
Oh, my throat hurt.
Oh, man.
Beat me up! Well,
it's our ship.
We run the
See
ship.
See that one.
He can't be beamed up if there's no us. We need those highlights.
Gonna sit there.
Don't you realize none of this works without the metaphorical spaceship in which you do a radio show on? You get it, right?
Well, despite all their success, Winthrop is still not in the top 25. The punks that are include number 17, Oklahoma State.
What does it take to get the top 25?
Jeez. Sister Jean is back in the top 25, and freaking Winthrop can't get in there? They haven't lost in like 4 months.
You need a sister and a father.
Sister Jean and Father Dave.
Yeah, Father Friedman. They got Sister Jean, we got Father Friedman.
I'm just picturing Friedman getting wheeled into the wheelchair with the crowd. Waving to the cardboard cutouts.
Wearing like a monk's robe.
he's throwing communion hosts like frisbees out to the fans.
Hey. Father Friedman with bacon.
Oh, man. College
I'll
basketball elsewhere.
Without those burritos.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Back in the NBA, tonight's Raptors-Pistons game postponed. They hope to play tomorrow instead. Toronto had a new COVID positive yesterday from spring training. Ace third baseman Matt Chapman, 1-for-4 as the DH, 1-for-3 as the DH yesterday. It was his first game since September hip surgery. And finally, some extra hockey last night in Vegas.
Tipped away by Stone. It's out to center. Stone trying to get the breakaway. He got slashed. Stone coming in. It's now a 2-on-1. Stone centers, and they score! Pacioretty wins it in overtime on the fifth setup by Mark Stone.
Dan Duvan, Golden Knights Radio Vegas, a 5-4 win over Minnesota. The Hurricanes beat the Panthers 3-2 in OT, and Toronto blanked Edmonton 3-0. DA, back to you.
Excellent. Thank you, Bogues. When we come back here on the show, advanced analytics behind J.J. Watt's decision and your epic fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, so we asked you guys today, with the addition of J.J. Watt, who's the best team in the NFC West now that Watt is in Arizona? There was an overwhelming majority of the vote. 58% of you said the Rams. Now, note that the Seahawks went 12-4 last year, and yet 58% said the Rams after the addition of Matthew Stafford, 18% put J.J. Watt's new team, the Cardinals, 16% said the Seahawks. So that was the third place team by vote by you guys, the Seahawks at 16% and the Niners at just 8%. Some fun facts about J.J. Watt's new home. Arizona became the 48th state in 1912, right around when John Sterling was born. Arizona leads the nation in copper production. Who knew? The official state neckwear is a bola tie. Gotta love that, Philip Rivers. And the cheese crisp is identified as a must-eat. If you're in Arizona, you need to eat like this. You need to eat like this. Mariana tweets, I wasn't in a good mood because I was exposed to COVID. I'm waiting to get tested, but now my cheeks hurt from smiling and laughing. So thank you guys. That was a good one. That was a good old-fashioned laugh fest right there. That was a make your sides hurt laugh fest. That was pretty good. If we make you laugh once, make you think once per morning, we feel like we've done our job. So hopefully that did it for you.
Feeling AZ, good, doing well.
AZ and Wisco tweets, DA, today I'm trashing my awesome dog Chelsea. There are no Spurs fan of this house, by the way. for waking me up at 2 with her snoring like she was operating a functional sawmill in my bedroom. Hashtag trash Chelsea.
That deserves a trash can emoji.
Let's get to your epic fail of the morning. Today had it all, really, and it included the debut of a brand new segment. That new segment's called Meat on the Bone, where the Brian Windhorst of the Peter Schwartz beat, Mraz, takes aim at Mraz, at Schwartz's most recent tweets and social media posts. Here is Mraz in your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
There's no phones allowed at the Schwartz dinner table, which I think is a nice American standard dinner culture to have. You know, we can be so consumed with our phones, you know, after mom cooks and slaves for 4 hours for a nice meal, maybe some stew.
Arby's, we have the meat.
The problem here is after being asked what he had for dinner, he responded that he was having noodles and company, which shouldn't surprise anybody. It is takeout, in fact, something that is a staple at the Schwartz dinner household. And I guess my point here would be, I don't need to know that there's no tweeting at your dinner table, but I need to know why now there's a rule. Why is there, in a house that has no rules, a house that we know, you'll buy a new TV for a son who throws a baseball through the other one. Basically, you don't refuse to cook. You won't even cook breakfast for your wife on Mother's Day. You gotta go to IHOP. Why now do you have a rule around dinner? So as you crack open the styrofoam to-go trays at Schwartz House for dinner, just understand, put those phones down. Rules do apply, DA. Now, last but not least, DA, just 22 hours ago, as spring sports begin here in the state of New York, finally kids are allowed to play high school sports. His son, who we have tracked forever, longtime football star, has played in a lot of USA camps, a center that fancies himself a Nick Mangold mold. Pete tweeted 7-year-old at, and I'm not going to include this, his son's Twitter handle, said to me at a MacArthur High School, that would be the high school Long Island game.
My son won the tickets.
Dad, I'm going to play on this field someday. Today, he's on the field as a MacArthur General for the first day of practice. Good luck to my son and all the student athletes who begin their delayed fall football season today. And here's the only problem I have here. You know how you play on that field? By simply not moving and allowing your dad to sign the permission slip.
The big ragu.
It's not like he had to beat anything to get on the field. It's a walk-on situation, and you live in the town. 7-year-old, this one's a tear to my eye.
Man. That was great. So we've now debuted A Green Party and Meat on the Bone. In the last couple of weeks, two soon-to-be staples of the DA show. And the thing is about Meat on the Bone, there's content forever because Pete will never stop tweeting about his personal life and never stop sharing, oversharing photos on Facebook.
There's always meat on the bone.
There's always literal meat on the bone. And it's a great point about his son. Like, it was just the first day of spring. It was just the first day of what? Junior high football, JV football,
high
everybody
school, ninth grade football.
So JV, right?
Yeah.
So everybody gets on the field. Everybody puts on, there's been no cuts.
Everybody plays.
And he made it seem like he took his kid to Giant Stadium or Mercedes-Benz Stadium Atlanta and said, Dad, I'm going to play on this field one day. He took his kid to a high school game with some bleachers where they in the town they live on, and he said, Dad, I'm going to play in this field one day. And his dad controls that by just signing the permission slip. Of course you could play on the field one day. Matter of fact, you could go up right now and run on the track if you'd like.
It's not quite like Trey Young meeting like Kobe Bryant when he was in eighth grade. It's like, Dad, I'm going to play on this field one day. Okay, you know what? If you want to do it today, I can sign the permission slip. You can do that.
Not at M&T Bank Stadium.
Actually, if you want to just go run passes, I could just throw you the Nerf right now and you could play on that field.
My hip's stable enough.
Tomorrow morning we're going to have Coach Kelsey from the Winthrop Eagles, which is very exciting, so we'll talk to him about our favorite team in college hoops, and Ian Eagle is going to join us as well, so that should be a lot of fun. We'll do some NBA with Ian, and of course he's one of the voices of March Madness on CBS as well. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. And thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. We're taping the PGP after the show today, so look for that. I'm DA. Be good and be good to one another. The Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.